Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Just coming back from the offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We'll be kicking off the papers in a moment, but I'll be joined by our very own Ken Doherty, live from Milton Keynes. In racing, we will be talking to racing pundit and Racing Post contributor Andrew Blair-White about the very latest news and getting his lucky 15 for this weekend as well. In rugby, of course, on Champions Cup weekend, I'm going to be talking to former Ireland and Leinster hooker Shane Byrne to discuss who he thinks will win and whether Ron Nogara's team can get across the line. In GAA, we're delighted to be joined in studio by GAA correspondent Declan Drake, looking back at Dublin's victory over Laois last weekend in the hurling, and we look forward to the big clash this weekend when Dublin take on Kerry. In football, Alan Cawley, of Cawley's Call fame, of course, will be on to chat about last night's League of Ireland matches and preview the final day of the Premier League. We're really excited about that one, and then look forward to Wednesday's Europa League final as Manchester United take on Villarreal. In golf, of course, it's been very exciting stuff watching the PGA over the last couple of days. The Irish doing pretty okay. Porrick and Shane Lowry still in the mix. Deirdre Smith will be on, of course, one of Ireland's leading golf amateurs, to talk about that and also about Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadows' performances in the LPGA. And also we have a special guest on today, Steve O'Timothy, talking about his charity wheelchair boxing match with the Olympic medalist Paddy Barnes, of course. Steve-O is a comedian from Galway, and it's a wheelchair boxing match, so that gives it a little bit of a twist. So it'll be very interesting to talk to Steve-O. Looking forward to that this morning. And we also sent our producer and roving reporter, Jane McNamara, out to chat with runner Sean Tobin ahead of the race in the Diamond League in Gateshead in the UK on Sunday. So loads coming up in an absolutely packed show, but as usual, we want to hear from you on the show. You can text us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and Twitter at Sport1068. Okay, Ken is on the line. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing great.
All good.
Yeah, great. Really good chatting to you. Finally, we got a bit of decent weather here this morning. The rain has stopped. Two days is horrendous, but it's good this morning.
Yeah. I mean, it's been horrendous over here the last couple of days as well. But managed to get out and play a wonderful golf course, Lindrick Golf Course, not far from Sheffield in Worksop, where they played the Ryder Cup there in 1957, I think.
Wow.
And there's a great picture of Christy O'Connor Sr. on the wall. He played alongside Dave Rees and Peter Alice as well. And there's some great history attached to the course. But yeah, great to see our very young Christy O'Connor Sr. on the wall there and looking very, very young and handsome, I must say.
Brilliant.
1957. Yeah, what a great course as well. Great history attached to it, you know.
And how did you play?
And I left my history there. I've lost plenty of balls around the
oh,
I went into the rough. The rough was so high there. I nearly lost me bag and clubs in the rough. I couldn't find them anywhere.
Yeah. You're not the tallest in the world. I probably could have lost.
No. I needed a stepladder just to get out of one of the bunkers that was that deep.
Sounds like a good spot. Now, did you win the money in the end?
We have the money on the 7th, on the 18th, would you believe? The guy we're playing with, he's a pro from York, and he had to birdie the par 3, finished with a par 3 18th, but he had to birdie the par 3 for a half. But there was thunder and lightning during the game as well, so that'll tell you what it was like over here, you know, for the last couple of days.
Yeah, no,
but it was lovely. I've been really enjoying the golf, though. The PGA has been magnificent, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been something else, and you know, it's been going okay. Porrick was doing a bit better than he did in the end, and Shane Lowry, they're both there on par, which is good on that course. It's some course that, and Rory made a bit of a resurgence as well, although he had a little bit of a stumble there at the end, but he made the cut. So at 3 over. Like, he's well in the running. Mickelson was sublime again in the earlier part of the day. I was just stitching balls right up beside the pin every single time. But it's an unbelievably tough course, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, how do you fancy that par 3, 17?
Oh, my God.
224 yards into a stiff wind.
Yeah.
And there's no, it's not like Greystones, Reggie, where there's bailout areas left, right, and center. There's no bailout areas here on that 17. My God, it's one of the toughest par 3s I think I've ever seen. And even all a lot of the professionals there, I mean, they're loving this sort of, the toughness, the last four or five holes, yeah, from 14 right down to 18, into the wind, along the beach. I mean, some beautiful views, but my goodness, how tough they are. But that par 3 does take the biscuit, doesn't it?
Absolutely unbelievable. And I saw at one stage, one of the commentators was talking about Brooks Koepka, and he had 200 yards out, and yeah, he's taking a 9-iron out of the bag to hit that one. Seriously. It just, the driver.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's all right downwind. But when you're into the wind of that 200 and that par 3 or any of those holes, because yesterday particularly, they were all into the wind those last five holes. Now, apparently the wind is going to change over the weekend, so they might be downwind, so it'll be a little bit easier. But I mean even what's his name, Coulter, was laughing. He was 6-under coming to the 14th, so he's got the five holes to go, but he was on for a course record, and he's looking up on the scoreboard and he's sort of laughing to himself. They've actually announced that he's on the course record. Well, anyway, he finished with four bogeys and finished 2-under.
But with it being such a tough and the wind and everything else, you're looking at DeChambeau there and you're thinking that he has a great chance, but he has to be so accurate. He can't go off track with those drives.
Yeah.
I saw him hitting one yesterday, 327, and I think, as you said, it was even into the wind at that.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a ferocious, isn't he? It's the speed of his club and everything, you know. But he's great to watch, I must say. Whatever you think about him, that, you know, he's going to blow a lot of course away. He doesn't, you know, but he has a wonderful touch as well around the greens. You know, he's a good putter. He's got lovely chipping, but his power is just phenomenal. Right. Like, you know, you never seen that. Like, but isn't it so refreshing to see Phil Mickelson? You know, the big, he's such a beautiful player. Been one of my favourite players of all time, I think. And watch him top of the leaderboard. He's so great. Yeah, he's
lovely. I was watching him yesterday, and as we were watching it, they were giving flashbacks to the Ryder Cup of 20 years ago, and there he was, Nixon, hitting these amazing shots. And right there yesterday, like, just so competitive. Not like one commentator even mentioned the fact that he's taking much longer over his shot choice now.
Yeah.
And it's really accurate with it. But oh my God, you couldn't write him off. I mean, I know there's an awful long way to go in that competition.
Yeah.
But you really couldn't write him off for going all the way. I mean, he's going to be under pressure. There's a lot of the big names coming up behind him. And Brooks Koepka is particularly looking like he's in form at the minute well. But, I tell you, with the experience he has. What about the two lads, Shane Lowry and Porrig? Do you think they have any...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when both of them are on level par, and, you know, they're five shots behind. But as I said, like, on those last four or five holes, you could lose four or five shots, you know?
Yeah.
So They're well in the hunt, and I think it's one of those courses that suits sort of Lowry and Harrington, because they're great shot makers, you know, and they can be patient and they can plot their way around the course. That it's not just all about, like, you see a lot of American courses, they're very, very open and they're shooting, like, you know, 19 under after like four or five. You can't do that around this course, you know.
No, absolutely.
And I think probably, even though Mickelson's on 5-under now, like 5 or 6, 7 under might actually win the tournament, you know. So, the likes of Lowry and Harrington, who are great shot makers in their own right, they could plot their way around that course. And you know, if they come in under, have another couple of boardies like today, and put themselves on 2 or 3 under, they're well in the hunt for Sunday. So, I wouldn't rule them out at all. And I think if Lowry had a putted a little bit better, I mean, he could have had another 4, 5, 6 birdies even over the 2 rounds. So, he's playing well, Larry, over the last little while, hasn't he? He's been putting himself in the mix, which is really great to see. Like, you know, as you said, the leaderboard is incredible. Like.
Yeah, and Larry loves that kind of Lynx-y style play as well. So. Yeah, no, I'm really excited about the next 2 days for that. It'll be well worth a watch. Plenty going on elsewhere as well. Of course, good old Man U in the final of Villarreal on Wednesday. So I'm sure you can't wait for that one. What do you think of the chances?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it now, to be honest. You know, it's a little bit, I'm a bit sort of sorry for Maguire, you know, maybe as a Man United fan. If you had said this at the beginning of the season, Man United fans would have thought you were a bit mad. But to see Maguire, who's been really, really steady for United over the last season, and probably been one of our best players, to be honest, he's not going to make the final. It doesn't look like he will, which is a bit disappointing, you know. But, I mean, what a finish. You know, it'd be a nice finish if they can win the Cup. I mean, I know it's only the Europa League, but Mourinho won it the last time with United, but it would be a nice little feather in sort of Ole's cap to say that he's actually won something, you know, and he can try and press on now for next year. You know, Harry Kane, wouldn't he be a fantastic boy for Manchester United? I know he may go to City, but, you know, he may come to United, you know. So that would be, they need a few players for next year for sure. But the Europa League will be something to look forward to, even if it is just the Europa League, you know. Yeah. Anything at this stage, Reg,
well,
you know.
Like, that's it, you know. Let's be honest, at the start of the season, we had plenty of doubts about United, and there they are, sitting firmly in second place, with top four guaranteed, and they're in the final on Wednesday. And you would have taken that at the beginning of the year, there's no question about that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think just to make sure you're in the Champions League, it's disappointing to be so far behind City still, and particularly the home form, you know, and they've sort of gone off the boil since they've been guaranteed, basically, sort of Champions League. You know, the last couple of matches have been disappointing, but so they're playing Wolves, of course, tomorrow, and then the big match will be on Wednesday, you know. But I'm really looking forward to tomorrow because there's so many great matches, and particularly the race between Chelsea, Leicester, and of course Liverpool for that the two Champions League spots between three teams. So it's gonna be so interesting. But who do you fancy?
And they've no easy matches. I mean, yeah. So no. Like Chelsea are away to Villa. So that's going to be a really tough one. And I know Chelsea are playing great stuff at the moment and all that kind of stuff, but that's still going to be a tough one. Now, Liverpool probably have the easiest of it all.
Although some would argue, because
they've got Crystal Palace at home and Leicester have got Spurs at home. And Spurs are a bit all over the place. So some would argue that Leicester are a shoe-in for that. But it could come down to goal difference then as well, you know, because...
I'm just looking at the goal difference. So Leicester are on 20... Liverpool on 24 and Chelsea on 23, and there's only a point between the three teams. I mean, Liverpool have done amazingly well. If they win their last match against Palace, they've won the last four matches to get into the Champions League, which would be incredible.
What about the Alisson goal?
Oh, it was brilliant, wasn't it? It was absolutely superb. What a header.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say if he went up there 100 times more, he wouldn't even hit the ball, never mind hit it the way that he did. So it was just an unbelievable finish. Oh, and the emotion that came out after it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was delighted for them, to be honest, because it makes it interesting, doesn't it, for the last... And of course, Leicester winning the FA Cup last week. I mean, the emotion and the scene and having the crowd back and everything... was just fantastic as well for Leicester. So it's been a wonderful season, even in this pandemic year, you know, with no crowds. And I know a lot of the matches, you know, you lose a bit of interest. But I think, you know, having the crowds back, you know, the way it sort of worked out with the Champions League spots, it's been really, really good. There's been some great matches as well.
Yeah, no question about it. No, I am really
great stories.
It'll be brilliant. Will you watch a bit of the rugby tomorrow, do you think, or...?
Oh, yeah, I'm hoping O'Gara, like, wins. I mean, I know it's going to be tough for his La Rochelle against Toulouse, but I think, you know, wouldn't it be great for him as well if he capped off a wonderful year in rugby for himself, you know?
I will, yeah. I mean, it's going to be, it's a classic encounter. There were scenes yesterday, you probably didn't see them, but there were scenes yesterday of the team leaving and La Rochelle and the crowds that were gathered for this. Of course, this would be
really
historic for them. And there was, like... they do it very much like, you know, the way the Turkish are in the football with the flair.
Yeah.
And the drums and all that euphoria. It was exactly the same as they were leaving to get on the plane to head, or bus, whichever they were. I can't remember which they were getting to get up. But the crowds were outside just in that frenzy, getting ready to send them off. And there's a lot of pressure on Ronan and John O'Gibbs to get it done. I feel that they will do it. I just think that watching the two sides, that they're better than Toulouse in that
game. Yeah.
They're just a bit more powerful. I put it that way. They're more of a
better
than Toulouse. But is there
a pressure on them? Because they won't be favourites against Toulouse, even though the way they've been playing fantastic. But But did they go in a slight underdog? I mean, just the fact that he's got them to the final. I know the pressure, you know, it's the next step of winning and winning the cup. But would he not sort of have the opinion and sort of look at, we've got nothing to lose. We've done so well getting to the final now that, you know, we're up against one of the greatest teams of all time to lose. You know, great history.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all. You wouldn't think that way. Ronan O'Gara would never think that way.
No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying think that way. But they'd be going in as underdogs. They won't be favourites, obviously, against Toulouse, would they?
No, they won't be favourites against Toulouse. Toulouse will be the slight favourites, but they won't think that way at all. Like, I mean, look, the bottom line is it's very rare. I mean, I looked at the things. There's four players from that squad in. In the semi-final, I think it was three seasons ago. So you'd rarely get to finals, number one, but number two, the squads are changing so much all the time. You don't know when you're going to have a group of players together again. It's very rare that one squad plays with the same squad again the next year in rugby. That's the way it is. A lot of people come in and come out, careers end, squads are retiring. So you have to make the most of it while you're there. You get that one
thing
make it happen.
Yeah.
So and you know, who knows like when Rog will move on and if he'll get another chance to be there. So I don't think there's anything that can relieve the pressure off them at all. Favourites, but I don't think it will. It'll be mad stuff. And it should be a cracking final. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Okay. Yeah, it's gonna be amazing.
I better let you go on there. Get back to getting your putting in on the carpet and getting ready for when you get back here.
Have you been playing any yourself?
Yeah,
have you been playing any?
I played Druids twice this week, so it was brilliant.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I didn't take the money on either day, but we're getting close.
No.
We're getting close.
good man. Okay.
All right.
Look forward to having a game.
Yeah.
Okay, Reg. Have a good weekend.
Good to talk to you. All right. Mind yourself. All right. That's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest from over in the UK. And like everybody else, really looking forward to the Europa League final on Wednesday when Man United are taking on Villarreal, and it's going to be an interesting one. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Galway comedian Sir Steve O'Timothy. Good morning, Steve O. How are you?
Hello. How's things?
Things are good, thanks. For those of our listeners that don't know, and there can't be too many now at this stage because you're such an internet sensation, Steve-O is a comedian, of course, from Galway, well known for many different parody accounts and, basically taking the mick out of people. Sometimes taking it a little bit too seriously, getting a bit of stick during the week, I believe, from the comic sketch you did on the Israeli situation. Some people can take it too hard, too much, can't they, Steve-O?
But you kind of get that because it's such a topical and emotive issue at the moment, so I suppose it comes with the territory, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, and some people just don't understand sometimes when it is satire. But, of course, you're on today to talk to me because you're... I think you got yourself into a bit of trouble for maybe opening your mouth without thinking a little bit. You're in a boxing match.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. I use a wheelchair and crutches to get around, so I ended up agreeing to a match, a fight with former Olympian Paddy Barnes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the hell I do. I think I signed my death cert at this stage.
Well, I tell you, I know Paddy. I've met him many times, and he's a pocket rocket. There's no doubt about it. He's probably up to my elbow, but I still wouldn't like to take a smack off him. How is this going to work? How are you going to organize it?
Basically, Paddy's going to get in a wheelchair, I'm going to get in a wheelchair, and he's going to murder me, more or less.
And tell me this, there's a bit of distance between the two of you when you're in wheelchairs. How are you going to manage the reach?
Oh, see, I'm tall, so I've the upper hand there straight away, but then again, he's a boxer and I can't fight, so any little advantage I have is taken away straight away.
Okay, and what's obviously this is a charity match and it's all done in good taste for the charity. What way are you gonna? What's the plan around it? Are you gonna stream it, or is it gonna be?
We haven't even got that far. We just Paddy agreed to it, and then we were like, right, let's throw up a GoFundMe and hope for the best and see how much we can raise. So we haven't. I suppose we'll gauge interest and see what way we'll go about it. But I know there's a vast majority of people out there that would like to see me get my face smacked off me. So there could be an audience.
There could be a real interest in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've no doubt. Paddy's a good sport, actually. So I'd say
he's a legend.
Plenty of angles around it. Yeah, I mean, you know, I know you well. I follow you on Twitter, Steve-O.
Thank you.
I enjoy your sketches, Farmer Michael and Kathleen, and all the various ones that you have. They're great crack. But it must be hard at the moment, is it? I mean, I know you do a lot online, but not being able to perform live and do the thing that you love to do.
Oh, yeah, to drive you insane. Yeah. Being stuck around the house, but now don't get me wrong, I get very like panicky and nervous coming up to gigs, but you miss that the after feeling, you know what I mean, when the show is done and you can like relax and you know it went well, you miss that feeling. But yeah, I think it's March 2020 was our last show, so that's probably the biggest gap ever since I started this thing, so
yeah. And tell me, Steve-O, I nearly called you Michael there. I'm sure
I'm well used to it.
I'm sure that happens a fair bit. But tell me, you're also like you're a good advocate for mental health and, you know, people's awareness of it and not being afraid to speak up. Now that hopefully we're starting to see a little bit of a comeback towards live events and everything else, are you anxious and worried about getting back out in front of a stage again and performing live?
Oh yeah, of course. I'm paranoid, like I'll have forgotten it or I'll mess up, or you know what I mean, because you're always constantly training when you're on the road and you're adding bits as you go and stuff, so it's kind of like, will I be stale, will I be rusty, you know what I mean? So you're kind of, I suppose it'll just take a good bit of practice sitting in the room, going through it.
Yeah, and you rely a lot on your content for current affairs and things that are happening in the moment, you know, when you'd be sitting in the car doing your sketches. It is based around, you know, having a go at people that are making, you know, daws of themselves maybe online,
yeah,
elsewhere. So does that feed into the live show then as well? Do you feed off the audience as it's happening?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm. There's a good bit of audience participation, and it's a kind of... It's a different kettle of fish altogether, the live show. It's a bit more, how would you say, organised and a bit more kind of put together a bit better than a 30 or a 60 second sketch.
Yeah, very good. I just had a text in here. You're going to love this, just in from Paddy. Tell Steve-O to make sure his tyres are pumped up and ask him, does he like hospital food? So you better pump the tyres.
Oh, the little man's getting brave.
He is, yeah, he is, no doubt about it. Come here, tell me, how can people contribute to this, or where can they make a donation?
I suppose find the GoFundMe link. It'll be on my Facebook page at Sir Steve-O Timothy, or on my Twitter at Sir Steve-O Timothy. It's all there.
Okay, well, Steve-O, it's been great chatting to you. I wish you the very best of luck against Paddy. You might need it.
Thank you so much, man.
Can't put a little electric engine into the back of that chair and maybe keep going around in circles. Would that work?
Ah, just loosen the wheels on Paddy's one.
Yeah, exactly. Give him just keep out of his reach. That's all I say to you, because he is a pocket rocket. But I'm probably 10 stone heavier than him, but I still wouldn't like to get a smack off him.
I'll bring a baseball bat.
Maybe two of them. All right, Steve-O, great chatting to you. Good luck with the gig, and hello to Paddy out there as well.
Thank you so much, man.
Great idea, and I look forward to seeing it. I'm sure we'll see plenty of it online.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All the best. That's Sir Steve O'Timothy there, who, of course, is a Galway comedian, well known for such things as Farmer Michael and Kathleen. Huge success and well known across YouTube and the internet. Check him out if you haven't already done so. And promoting as well the charity boxing match that he's going to be having against Paddy Barnes, of course, our own Olympian golf boxer. The two of them are going to take on each other in a boxing match in wheelchairs. So that's a new interesting angle, and I'm looking forward to see how that all unfolds. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but we still have loads to come. We're going to be talking to Deirdre Smith about the PGA and how both Porrig and Shane Lowry are getting on there, and Rory McIlroy making a little bit of a comeback as he makes the cut there too. And then, of course, Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadows have done well in the LPGA as well, and we'll have all the racing from Andrew Blair White after that, so don't go away. And welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Keep your text messages coming in on 087 11 55 777 and WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. One text message coming in from Ken Maguire in Terenure, reminding me that I never mentioned the great Paddy Ralla O'Reilly, of course, who is getting the call as bagman on his fourth Lions trip. Quite incredible. Great old pal Ralla, Irish bagman for all the years that I was involved in the Irish setup, and many more years after that. And as Ken points out to me, four Lions tours as well. I thought, Rally, you'd retired. You're still at it. Fair play to you. Still blagging your way onto these trips. No better man. The best bagman I ever saw in the world, bar none. So shout out to Paddy Ralla O'Reilly as well. It's time to turn our attention to golf now. Delighted to be joined by Deirdre Smith, of course, our regular contributor, talking about the PGA. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
Things are great, thanks. Delighted to see a bit of decent weather out there. Hopefully it'll keep up now. It makes it a little bit easier. Played a bit myself yesterday, but it was a bit wet, so I don't like the rain. But that's my excuse for playing badly. But they're not playing badly over in Keogh Island. It's unbelievable golf going on. What a golf course.
Yeah, well, look, you know, a bit like the Walker Cup a couple of weeks ago, the golf course seems to be the winner. Looks magnificent. Never got a chance to play there, but maybe someday put it on the bucket list.
Well, I tell you, only someone of your quality could play it. I wouldn't like to go. A bucket of balls I'd need out there, that's for sure. It's an unbelievable course. And it's so difficult. Ken and myself were just talking about the 17th, but every single hole on the course is terrifying to me.
Yeah, well, you know, the wind has played a massive factor this week, you know, for them. Yesterday it just seemed to be particularly when Rory was going out, you know, Brad Faxon was on talking about the fact that it was probably the draw had a massive effect, you know, the late early people, the late on first day, the early on the second day, they had the favourable times, and that can happen, you know. That's one of the unfair things about golf, is that, you know, your draw on the first 2 days can have a massive effect on your you know, how you play, especially with the wind. And when you have a course where probably in the afternoon the wind gets up a bit more, you can just be on the wrong side of the draw, and it can make, you know, you can put you out of the tournament. So Rory happened to be on that bad side of the draw. Now, he didn't drive the ball as well as he normally does and as well as he can, so it put him in trouble on the first day, and that 75 was, you know, just put him on the back foot yesterday. Although he came back fantastic, I just really saw signs of great maturity yesterday on the front nine. He was so patient, and then he holed a few putts just around the turn, but then he dropped those three crucial shots in the last three holes. And but look, they're playing the hardest. Statistically, the 17th is the hardest hole on the course. It's playing 3.59. The 18th is playing 4.51. The 15th is playing 4.49. So they're half a shot harder for the field. So it's no disgrace that he did that. Interesting that Harrington actually parred those last four holes.
Yeah.
And look at the position he's in. So. But for the course, yeah, I agree. It looks magnificent.
You mentioned Porrig there, and it was really interesting because I listened to his interview beforehand, and when Porrig talks, it's all around. He kind of relishes the challenge of these courses, you know, whereas other players might be sort of going, oh well, it's a difficult one, or is this, or you can hear it in his voice, he's dying to go out there and sort of attack it, and he only seems to know one way, which is to go and attack it, and it seems to pay it off because he's playing great stuff. I mean, he was doing even better. I think he was minus two at one stage,
yeah,
but he's right there in the hunt now at par.
Absolutely, and you know that you're so right about Pádraig. You know, he's just so dogged, you know, and that's what has won him the majors. You know, I mean, you know, he talked earlier in his career that he thought he was just going to be a journeyman pro, but you know, apart from his talent and he's so honest as well when he's interviewed about the way he approaches things and the way he goes about things, and you know, and he'd really be relishing this, and he's used to the wind and he's used to grinding out. And you know, if Pádraig Harrington has to make 18 pars, he'll make 18 pars. You know, so whereas that will frustrate a lot of other players who are used to having birdies. And look at 18 pars around there with a couple of birdies thrown in, or, you know, 15 pars with a couple of birdies thrown in. But a lot of these guys want to be making birdies. They're birdie machines. And if they're not making birdies, they're getting frustrated. And you get frustrated on a major championship course, you know, you start chasing it then and you start making mistakes. So it's going to suit the likes of Harrington. You know, I know Phil Mickelson is right up the top there. Really creative player. I'm not sure he'd have the patience of Harrington. You know, I think you know, Pádraig Harrington will have far more patience than Mickelson. Mickelson likes to be making birdies too. But look, he's been there himself, because he'll know what to do to win a major too. So it's a really intriguing leaderboard, really.
And as well as that then, I was talking to Ken about Brooks Koepka as well. He's playing exceptionally well, but also, of course, Masters champion Hideki Matsuyama, he's there on 3-under as well. When you look at the names right up there, Paul Casey again on 2-under, Brandon Grace on 3-under, it's so, like, there's nothing between sort of 20th place and first place in terms of who might go and win this. And of course, Lee Westwood there as well. He's always thereabouts, Westwood.
Yeah, well, look, you know, you look at Casey and Westwood, probably two of the best players in the world who've never won a major, and, yeah, and nobody would begrudge it to them. And, you know, it would be unbelievable if either of them won it. Particularly Westwood, you know, because he has been such a European stalwart for so many years. You know, those South Americans as well, you don't rule them out. You know, Louis Oosthuizen, he knows how to get the job done too. And his swing in the wind is just, you know, the rhythm and tempo of that man's swing is, you just watch it all day, you know. I mean, he's like Rory, he has that beautiful tempo. And that's what you need in the wind. And you know, he played unbelievable golf yesterday. Pulled a few nice putts, and I wouldn't rule those South Africans out. They're used to playing in the wind down in South Africa, and they'll relish those conditions. But it's wide open, as you say. Matsuyama as well, huge threat. I mean, unbelievable to see him right up at the top again. And it's rare that somebody wins two majors in a row, but yeah, you know, maybe those Asian players are made a bit different.
Yeah, he seems so calm you just and relaxed. Couldn't. He certainly did in the Masters. Nothing seemed to faze him, so I wouldn't put it past him to come out and power on from there, you know.
That just seems to be the strength of the Asian golfers. They just seem to be mentally so settled, just so even paced, so even tempered, and that's what you need. You can't be up and down. You have to treat every shot the same. And you know, they just seem to, especially the women, they seem to have mastered that craft.
Yeah. If you were to pick from here, who would you fancy?
Look, you'd have to pick Brooks Koepka, you know, out of the field. But look,
it's a lottery.
I mean, there's so, look, the leaderboard is packed with stars there. You know, you mentioned DeChambeau there earlier, talking to Ken as well. And I think it looks like he's reined in the power a little bit this week. It just doesn't look like he's hitting it just as hard.
Yeah.
He seems to be a little bit more accurate. And a lot of people criticise his short game. And I mean, gosh, some of this putts he holed yesterday. And, you know, he looks awkward. But he's obviously comfortable over it. And you know, you just couldn't rule him out. And he's a major winner too.
Yeah.
Gary Woodland's playing great golf. You know, even Martin Laird, Scottish player there, he's had unbelievable form recently. Mm. And then Hovland. I mean, I know he dropped a few shots late. I mean, but he's right in the mix too, and he's playing really good golf. But Koepka is the favourite, and Hovland is kind of second favourite. So, look, it's wide open.
Well, maybe as a little outside each way, we could go for Pádraig or Shane. You never know. The Lynx style might shoot Shane Lowry, and they might come good.
I agree. I agree totally, yeah.
I want to look at the LPGA. Leona Maguire, she missed the cut in the Pure Silk Championship in Virginia, but Stephanie Meadows only 5 off the lead.
Yeah, fantastic for Stephanie. She's just had a little turn twist now of good fortune there. She qualified for the US Open. Probably has taken the pressure off her. You know, I mentioned that last week. So it just means she can just go out and really enjoy it. She played with the number 12 in the world, Nafa Hattax, which was in the two first rounds, which again would have been fantastic for her just to be around those people and to see how they do it and to see what, because she's 111 at the moment on the LPGA Rolex rankings. So just great for her to have held her own in that company and to have performed as well as she has. Good finish now, a little bit of momentum going into the US Open would be fantastic in 2 weeks' time. Disappointing for Leon, I know. She dropped three shots in the last two and the first round. And, she's had a couple of weeks off. You know, sometimes that can be a good thing and sometimes it can be a bad thing. And, you know, maybe she just needs a couple of rounds now and a couple of competitive outings to get herself match fit again.
Yeah.
Not sure she's going to have another opportunity to qualify for the US Open. So, you know, when you're not just playing competitive golf every week, you can just, you know, it's the same in any sport. You just need to be match fit. And, you know, it's even starting again now at this time of the year, you know, fine, you can be grand for a nine-hole social, but as soon as you get the card in the hand, you need to do that a couple of times just to get yourself up to being, you know, mentally ready and grind out the pars and, you know, when you miss greens and things like that. So, you know, the layoff might have been a disadvantage to her in that sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure what our plans are for the next few weeks now. We'll see where she goes from here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I say, there's no doubt COVID and the layoffs and they're not playing competitive competition, it affects every sport. There's no doubt about it. You look at it right across the board. When they start to come back, it just isn't the same for a while. It takes a while to click into it. So hopefully that will all happen soon. Still, though, you know, five off the lead, not too bad of a chance either. So you never know what might happen there for Stephanie Meadow. Okay.
Yeah, look, it's great. It's great to be even talking like that. Exactly. There's somebody there at this stage, you know, and that they're right in the mix, and that they're representing, you know, women's golf from this country. That's to be talking about it is fantastic. It's just to get one of them over the line now. That's what we really need. But I don't want to put pressure on them.
Yeah. Okay, Deirdre. As always, great chatting to you. We'll catch up with you again very shortly.
Okay, Reggie. Cheers. Thanks.
Yeah, that's Deirdre Smith. Bye-bye. There, of course, one of our leading golf amateurs, giving us all of the golf latest information. They're going to take a quick break now, but we will still have racing to come in this hour. I'm going to be talking to Andrew Blair White, looking back on all the stories from this week, and also getting his lucky 15. So don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Keep your text messages coming in on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Still plenty to come on the show. After the news at 10, we'll be talking to former Ireland and Leinster hooker Shane Byrne about the rugby. We're going to be talking to Declan Drake about all the GAA, and Alan Cawley will be covering the football and looking forward to that huge Super Sunday tomorrow in the final of the Premier League. It's time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by a regular contributor, Andrew Blair White. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Reggie. How are things?
Things are great, thanks. Good form. Weather's picking up. There's nice forecasts for decent weather happening. So there's plenty of good racing going on as well. What have you got for us this week?
Yeah, mostly focusing in around the Curra, Reggie. And actually, as you say that, the last couple of days, the heavy rain there has really impacted the ground. So it's now heavy in places at the Curra, which will affect a lot of these flat horses. But we've got the Irish 2,000 guineas today. We've the Irish 1,000 guineas tomorrow. And these are both fascinating races, especially the Irish 2,000 guineas today. Probably made by the fact that Jim Bulger runs his two best horses together in it. He runs Poetic Flair, who won the English 2,000 guineas. And he runs McSwinney, who was such a good two-year-old last year, who loves soft ground as well. Aidan O'Brien has a few in there, a few of the disappointments in the English 2000 guineas, the likes of Van Gogh and Wembley, and also Jesse Harrington runs Lucky Vega. So it's a real fascinating race. I was very keen on Lucky Vega for the majority of this week. I'm just a little bit tempered by the ground with him, and you'd have to be very, very interested in McSwinney on this heavy ground. He's around 6-7-1. I don't think it's a bad each way bet whatsoever. He won a heavy ground Group 1 at the end of last year, so you know he goes in it. And even though he's second choice on jockey bookings, Rory Cleary takes the ride, Kevin Manning on Poetic Flair.
I think McSwinney could well take a bit of beating.
I fancied McSwinney a couple of weeks ago, if I remember right as well, but I think he didn't perform. He was fourth or fifth that day. So Jessie Harrington is saying herself that she expects Lucky Vega to put a bold bid for this one in the Irish 2000. So, yeah, it could be a real battle, but you're worried a bit about the ground.
Yeah, no, I really do like this Lucky Vega. I think he's an excellent horse, and he won the Phoenix Stakes at the Curragh last year in really impressive fashion. It was actually one of the best two-year-old performances I've ever seen in my life, Reggie. It was absolutely spectacular. You just wonder, there was stamina doubts going into the English 2000 Guineas, which was on good ground, and whether he's going to see out the mile over a heavy ground. That's the only thing that would temper your enthusiasm. You're right about McSwinney. He's slightly disappointed at Leopardstown a few weeks ago. Jim Bulger came out saying he wasn't overly happy with him, needed to get another race into him before the Derby. So I think probably it's a competitive enough race. I wouldn't put anyone off backing a couple of horses in it. And probably the two I will take are Lucky Vega and McSwinney.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the rest of the card. So will we go to the 145, the Tally-ho Stud Maiden?
Yeah, look, the Maiden's an interesting race, full of interesting two-year-olds. Looking through, though, probably most excitingly, the Marble Hill, which is the next race on the card, is a very fascinating two-year-old race. It would be interesting to see whether the O'Brien horses run in this. They're both very much firm ground pedigrees, both Catamosto and the Entertainer. They've both won their Maidens very well, but I think it might be prudent to actually sway away from them and maybe take a chance on Fuzzy Stack's horse and this Castle Star, who's around 4-1. He won a listed race last time out over 5 furlongs. He returns to 6 furlongs here, and I think he's got a great chance, to be honest, Reggie. I just would have severe doubts about the O'Brien horses in this ground. They often, if people don't know, the Aidan O'Brien, Joseph O'Brien horses, the majority of the horses they're getting bred from Galileo and those sort of sires do want better ground than what you're going to get at the Curragh, and it's going to be testing. So it's something to perhaps bear in mind. But you've got Castle Star, who I think has got a good chance at 4-1. And then you move on to the Greenland Stakes, the race after that, the Open Group 2 for over 6 furlongs. We see Glenn Shiel come over from England for Archie Watson, Holly Doyle, who's been probably the Rachel Blackmore equivalent of flat racing over in England, a real pioneer for the game for lady flat riders. And she comes over to ride Glenn Shiel, who loves soft ground, won a Group 1 at Ascot on Champions Day at the end of last year, which was a very impressive performance. He's on reappearance. I think he might be worth taking on at the prices. And there's a horse I quite like in this called Make a Challenge, who's 9-1. He loves heavy ground. He's been a little bit disappointing so far this season. But he comes back up to 6 furlongs for Dennis Hogan and Joe Doyle, who are a shrewd enough team. And this horse has won plenty of these sort of races in his time. And as I say, loves this course and distance and loves a bit of juice in the ground. So something certainly to bear in mind today if you are looking at the racing at the Curragh or tomorrow at the Curragh as well. You have to try and find horses that maybe have a little bit of form on that softer ground.
Okay, very good. The 2000 Guineas then, of course, you're going to stick with, who do we say on that, McSwinney?
Yeah, McSwinney and probably a little saver on Lucky Vega as well. Okay. And looking just having a look at the 1000 Guineas tomorrow, it's an excellent race as well. Joan of Arc leads the betting for that. She's a very good filly for Aidan O'Brien. Again, would I take her at that price given the ground concerns? Maybe not. And I'd perhaps have a go on No Speak Alexander for Jessie Harrington and Shane Foley. More of an each-way price, 9 or 10 to 1. Won her maiden on very soft ground at Roscommon, on heavy ground actually it was. And won her reappearance, a Group 3 race, unyielding to soft over 7 furlongs at the Curragh. She could well take a bit of beating in tomorrow's feature if people will want to have a play on Sunday.
Excellent. Okay, Andrew, will you give me your lucky 15 then for our listeners?
Yeah, well, starting off over in York, Reggie, in the 240, it's the Bronte Cup Filly Stakes over 5 miles, and Jessie Harrington brings the horse over to this, who I think is very interesting, a filly called Flor de la Luna. I think she's a horse to keep the right side of this year. She bombed out the last day at Gorham Park, but there were excuses for that.
Previous to that, she was a very good second on reappearance down at Cork behind a Paddy Toomey horse called Ma. And I think she's up to this Group 3 standard, to be honest. And she'll love the trip. She'll love a little bit of softer ground that she'll get as well. I think she'll go well. She's right 15-2. The 245 of the Curragh, the Greenland Stakes, I've mentioned him already, horse called Make a Challenge, who's 9-1. I think he's got a good chance on this softer terrain. Moving over to Haydock, the 3 o'clock, the Silver Bowl handicap, a very tricky handicap, but I like a Mark Johnson horse called Headingley at 9-1. He's an improving horse, unknown about the ground for him, but he's an improving horse. Would have won at Goodwood the last day as well, if not for hanging his chance away up the final furlong. Going back left-handed will suit him massively. And finally, I had to get one from the jumpers in, the 640 at Stratford, a handicap hurdle, a horse called Hooper for Nicky Henderson, who's around 5-2. Ben French Davis takes the ride. He's an improving horse. He's won his last three, and hopefully he might finish us off with a winner on the day.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Andrew, that's great. Some interesting picks there, and indeed the Curragh looks highly exciting as well. Even with the ground, it'll be really interesting to see how it changes things, because it's been very, very soft, but it will start to firm up with that good weather out there. So it'll be great to see how horses take on that challenge. Okay, Andrew, we'll catch up with you again next week, and hopefully we'll have some good news to report on some winners.
Perfect. Thanks, Reggie. See you next week.
Take care. That's Andrew Blair White there, of course, who is Racing Post contributor and racing pundit, for gives us all of our tips for the week, every week. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. You can text us on 087 1155 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Well, time to turn our attention to rugby now. And of course, the Champions Cup final is on this evening at 4:45, where we see La Rochelle take on Toulouse. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by the one and only former Ireland and Leinster and Lions sensation, Shane Byrne. Morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you doing, man?
Doing great, thanks. Really, really looking forward to this game later on today. It's been a while since I've had a match that I've really been sort of excited about. And this one is really right up there, because I know Toulouse are their favourites, but Clermont are a hell of a team as well.
La Rochelle, you mean?
That's what I meant to say. I'm reading Clermont because that's the ones that they lost in the Challenge Cup final.
Yeah.
I meant to say, yeah.
Absolutely, it's a belter of a game. 1-2 in the French top 14 at the moment. Two sides that have really been leading the charge in French rugby all this season. And look, we all know they're called the aristocrats of European rugby, Toulouse, and the history that they have. But it's 10 years since they've managed to get silverware in Europe. And La Rochelle, everybody watching out for how Ron Nagar is doing. And, you know, by the words of the players and the fellow coaches, he's doing an absolutely superb job there at the moment. And his European pedigree will obviously have an influence on how today works out.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. Like, Rog is determined. You know, I saw the scenes when La Rochelle were leaving for the game yesterday, and it was just unbelievable. Like, obviously, they haven't been in a top 14 final. Like I said, they lost to Clermont in the Challenge Cup, which is the only real sort of final that they've been involved in, but you can see with this one, I don't know, I know Toulouse are favourites, but I just have a feeling that there's something about the La Rochelle, the momentum and the crowd and everything behind them, that this could be their time.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's all about mindset. Look, as you well know, most of rugby's mindset. You can be physically the most amazing player, but if you're not set mentally, we can forget about it. So I think it's all about that. And Ronan will be very important to that. It's not just, you can't be happy that you've got to the final. You have to go out to win. And Ronan was given an interview, and he roughly said those same things as well, is that, you know, they have to be the mindset of that. They're there to win it. They're not there, listen, haven't we done great and brilliant, and we wait and see what happens. It's that we're here. We deserve to be here, and we're going out to win. Listen, it is going to be an absolute belter of a game, because both sides, yes, they both have hugely physical packs, and they don't mind rumbling up through the packs as well, but both backs have a absolutely amazing ability all the way through. But I suppose if you're looking for names, it's probably the names of the Toulouse backs versus the names of the forwards in La Rochelle. You know, Toulouse of Maynard, Kobe, Intermac, DuPont. Like, you know, what a backline. DuPont, probably the form player in the world at the moment at scrum half. And you know he'll be absolutely vital to what anything that happens on that pitch. And then you have the La Rochelle pack with that whole back row, Aldred, Gordon and Vito. And then you've got Will Skelton, the monster of a man who, you know, came up from Australia. They shaved him down, got him to lose a few stone when he was in Saracens and then over there. And playing 80 minutes, something he could never do before. And his influence on the game, as we saw against Leinster, is so important for them.
They shaved him down to a trim 125 kilos.
I know, yeah.
Is what he's weighing at
now. Incredible, isn't it?
I know. And Antonio, of course, the tight head. If I had him up against this much, 145 kilos he weighs in.
Yeah.
100.
Yeah. And able to use it. You know what I mean? It's just incredible the size of the guys. Yeah, absolutely.
We're looking at 30 kilos heavier than I was when I was playing Lucid.
No bother to you, Reggie. You'd be glad.
I'd have a sore neck, that's for sure. Holding that leg up all day.
Sure.
I'd have a hell of a sore neck. But in terms of the game itself, you know, exactly what you said there, and I think this is the most intriguing bit. You've got this amazing backline in Toulouse who can do wonders with the ball, the likes of DuPont and Entomac. I know they've got some injuries as well, of course. They're missing and suspensions. So, you know, that will affect them a little bit. But, you know, Marchand is injured, of course, and then the Huger is injured as well, and Zach Holmes in the centre.
And their captain. You know, it is, yeah, absolutely. Like, it is so important. So they probably haven't had the settled team that they would like. And where La Rochelle have had players coming back and coming back from injury, Botia and all these players, very, very important to them, you know. But I really think it's all about how La Rochelle, all the press are going, as you said, Toulouse are the favourites. Mm. So what La Rochelle have to do is do not let Toulouse settle into this game.
Yeah.
You know that as well as anyone. Whenever there's a situation where you're not the favourite, the biggest thing you can do is keep the so-called favourite uneasy. Don't let them settle. They did it brilliantly against Leinster. Brett Igo was pointing it out during the week by posting it, is that they slightly just slowed down Leinster's ruck ball by a myriad of ways. Slow rolling away, just hands. And it all just adds up. It was very, very cute, very, very smart what they were doing. And it's that kind of thing that they want to do, because we all know the way DuPont plays at scrum half for Toulouse is that normally when there's rumbling forward and you're getting gain line, scrum half just distribute. Whereas if he gets enough of the gain line, he'll go. And there's two things with that. Defence have to watch him, which makes space out otherwise. And also the fact is that if you blink for a nanosecond, he's gone. And
isn't that the key, though, Shane? Like, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing the mammoth pack that we just mentioned there in La Rochelle. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know the key to winning rugby matches is to starve those classy backlines like Entomac and DuPont of any ball. So and rugby matches are won up front. End of story. So it seems to me that this has to be a purely forwards focused game for La Rochelle, and their chances in the backs will come at a later stage. But they've got to starve Toulouse a ball, and they've got to be incredibly physical against the Toulouse pack and wear them down, and that's what will win them the game. If they don't do that, they're probably not going to win.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's where the battlefront is going to be in the pack. I think that amazing back row that La Rochelle have will really be trying to rule the game and play the game at their pace. It'll be a very, very hard, long day if Toulouse are getting fast ball. You know, in fact, I couldn't see them holding on for that length of time. But they were a side traditionally, you know, that they played amazing tack, but the defence wasn't great. But it seems to have been instilled into them now that the defence and has been superb. And that's all the way through the season. So, you know, it will be a big challenge for Toulouse to break them down, but it'll be a very, very long day if they cannot take Toulouse on, both in defence and attack, physically up front. If they don't start to get up on top there, you know, it would be a big, big mountain to climb.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's going to be a very interesting one. I suppose for the Irish element of it, we're all hoping for Ron O'Gara and John O'Gibbs, of course, given his connection to Leinster, that La Rochelle, and I think for the story as well. But then, of course, Trevor Brennan would be over in Toulouse giving me an earful because they're looking for number five, and what an achievement that would be if they could get that fifth star on the jersey as well.
There's big, I suppose, Irish interest in it as well. You know, it's everyone you mentioned there. It'd be, everyone wants to see things change and records. Been, you know, from an Irish point of view, Toulouse getting a step ahead of Leinster, making another star to go through on the chest. But, I think the pedigree that Ronan is bringing to us and the experience would be very important in this. He's played it very well. He's doing a superb job gaining all the experience that he needs. But you know that the way he played the game, you know, so many times we saw him in Europe just refusing to play, for instance, rugby in his own half. And he would have a plan and he would implement it brilliantly, kicking in the corners and et cetera, et cetera. We've seen him doing that. And that means, like, I think he will put a plan in place with La Rochelle and they will stick to it absolutely rigidly. And all depending, as you say, some things do happen that they can take them on physically up front. And I think he'll have something up the sleeve. And if the guys trust him and buy into it, it could, you know, it's all lending to, look, we don't know how it could go, but it's all lending to going to be a fantastic game. Because
prediction.
Prediction.
Who are you going for?
I think Toulouse should do it. I really do. But you know, the fairy tale would be fantastic. Ronan's travel back, and we all hope he ends up back here at some point coaching. And but it would be a great tag for him and a great tick box, you know, just to add that to his amazing credentials. The headlines would probably be all about him if he gets it.
Exactly.
But Toulouse are favourites for a reason.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go La Rochelle. I think the way they played against Leinster and just the feeling that I have around the momentum with the crowd and all that kind of stuff that they had leaving home, I just feel they're going to get the job done. So I'll go La Rochelle, you go Toulouse, and we'll meet somewhere in the middle. Shane, as always, great chatting to you. Thanks a lot for coming on this morning. We'll chat to you again very soon.
All right.
Mind yourself.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Shane Byrne there. He's going for Toulouse. I'm going for La Rochelle. It's going to be a cracking match one way or the other. 4:45 today. Champions Cup final. Don't miss it if you've got a bit of time free this afternoon. It should be a cracking game to watch. We're going to take a quick break now. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Now, I'm delighted to introduce a new section to the show. Our own producer, Jane McNamara, is going out as a roving reporter to chat to some of the top Irish athletes. And Jane, very welcome into the studio to chat to me about this. And I believe you were chatting to a runner from Tipperary yesterday.
Hi, Reggie. Yeah, thanks for having me. I was chatting to runner Sean Tobin. So Sean is from Clonmel. He's a member of the Dublin Track Club. And he has a very important race coming up tomorrow. He's racing the men's 5,000 metre in the Diamond League, which is in Gateshead in the UK. And that's at 8 o'clock tomorrow. So we spoke about that and we spoke about his hopes for the Olympics. We also chatted about his experience in the US. Sean had a 4-year scholarship in university in Mississippi. And he came home from that in 2018. So I started by asking him how he got on with that and how he was treated in the US.
We were treated incredibly well there. Obviously, facilities are out of this world. Obviously, everything is prioritised around you as a student athlete, that we picked our classes, what time our classes were. We were told what time our training was. So pretty much you worked around that. So everything you needed, everything you could ask for was there. So I really enjoyed it. I had a good experience.
How do you find coming back to the facilities that are in Ireland? I know that you're part of the Dublin Track Club.
Yeah, so like I think it's not more so facilities for distance runners. I think we're okay that we don't need any kind of fancy facilities. I think the biggest transition is kind of coming home and the culture and the mindset towards things at home is very different to the US. I think the biggest struggle I kind of came home with, I just came home and I was kind of a bit lost and there's nothing, no system to really fall into at home. It's just this mentality that, okay, either you go full-time work now or you're and tried to train on top of it, like as in the US, the mentality of being a full-time athlete or professional athlete and kind of getting after it. Well, we don't really have that. So coming home, I found transition very difficult, especially when you're kind of used to having everything kind of set up for you and looked after. And so I did find that transition quite hard coming home. So, and obviously then I managed to fall into with Phelan Kelly in the Dublin Track Club, and then was lucky enough to be supported by Richard Donovan. So the two of those guys were pretty much brought me pretty much from rock bottom, from coming home and slowly building me up over the last few years. So there's hundreds of Irish athletes that come back and deal with the same thing, and I think that's where we lose a lot of our athletes. Like, Ireland's full of talent. I think no matter where you go, you're going to find talent. I think it's just the support systems that we don't really have to help athletes and emerge. And like, you can see it now, even this year, there's a lot of guys who are improving, pulling out good times, PBs. And I think a large part of the reason is that is because of the last year with coronavirus, they've actually had the opportunity to just be able to train really and just focus on training and stay at home throughout coronavirus and not have to stress about other areas, about trying to work or college stuff, others. And now you can see kind of just another crop of guys coming through and kind of just a foundation we're really building and a much better standard. But obviously now that'll be difficult to see now in the next year, kind of when things slowly come back to normal again.
And when you talk about support systems, is there anything that comes to mind that could be done?
Yeah, like honestly, the hardest thing coming back to Ireland is just the living standard. It's very, like, for anyone, like even for us at Dublin Track Club, the biggest problem is for an athlete trying to come and live in a place like that where your rent is so high and you just don't have the support. Like, we just need the basics, you know. I think a lot of athletes, we just need the simple things of your housing covered, pretty much. You don't have to worry about where your next meal is going to come. You know, all you want is the very basics. How you're going to get to training, simple things like that.
And what would you say to younger kids now coming up interested in getting into running professionally?
Yeah, like it's a long process, and it's very, like it's hard to really kind of give advice. You know, it's something that it's just you have to kind of keep working at, and it's not something you decide. You go into for, oh, I'm going to try to have a go at this for 1 year or maybe 2 years. It's kind of something that you have to, once you commit, you're going to have to commit for a long time. And I kind of expect a lot of highs and lows, you know. At like, it's a very exciting kind of lifestyle as well, and the places the sport takes you and travel. And then there's so much to it and the people you meet, and it's incredible. But obviously, it's rootless at times as well.
And you said that there, you know, it's a kind of career with a lot of highs and lows. And in March, I know that you expressed that you were disappointed with the 3,000 meter event at the European Athletics Championship. So do you, like, it's been a couple of months, do you still feel that disappointment?
Yeah, you kind of try to put it away. It was 11, so it was poor enough results. So I just expected a bit more, but obviously I knew that's just the stepping stone pretty much going forward, mm-hmm. hopefully to the Olympics this summer and then a World Champs next year, and just keep things moving on from there. So it's just learning from those experiences. And initially, like, I think your emotions are pretty high coming off the track. So obviously it was really down at walking off the track, but then you go back and you reevaluate and you kind of see like, okay, I still ran a very good race. I just think, okay, I'm not where I need to be yet. It's just probably need more months, more time. And like, since then, I've just kind of got back to work and just kept training and kind of kicked on from that. So it's just part of the game, really.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Olympics there. So can you explain where you are now with that?
Yeah. So right now, it's very hard to with athletics right now, because a lot, like, obviously coronavirus is messed up everything, and it's like no one really knows what's going on. There's some people who are in ranking points or look like they're going to qualify, but the racing is kind of only starting right now. So I think a lot is going to change in the next month. And then there's people chasing the actual qualifying times. like the automatic times, and then there's a whole new ranking system. I think that a lot of us are still trying to get our head around. So for me, obviously I race kind of my first race Wednesday, and now I go again Sunday over 5,000 meters, and then I'll race another 5,000, and pretty much I'll kind of have a fair idea after those races where I stand going forward. So, and then it could potentially come down to the last weekend at the national championships, where it's worth a lot of points to win a national championships and run a quick time. So, mm-hmm. And obviously so far we haven't heard anything about those championships yet at home. So it is going to really come down to that last weekend, and when we know who's actually going and who's not.
Okay. And are you feeling hopeful now, or how do you feel?
Yeah, like I'm quite positive about it. This Sunday now is going to be very important for me. That'll be a big one. And then, so I'll kind of really know after this Sunday where I stand. And I've been training very well. It's been going really well. So it's sometimes you don't know where you kind of stand fitness wise. So a race can only tell. And like I race Wednesday night, and it wasn't really ideal conditions, and it was a small field. So, and like pretty much we had a world record holder in it for 5K and 10K. So he was chasing 3,000 meter world record, which is one of the toughest world records out there. So we are just kind of left in no man's land in that race. So it was quite difficult, but it was probably a nice tune up for this weekend. I think I'm racing midday. I'm not sure the exact time yet. So that should be a great event. I think it'll probably be the biggest athletics event of the year so far. So it should be very exciting with a lot of big names and stars in it.
Wonderful. That was our own Jane McNamara catching up there with Sean Tobin, who is running in the 5,000 metres in tomorrow's Diamond League fixture in Gateshead. And we wish him the very best of luck with that. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to GAA now. Delighted to be joined in studio, as always, by the one and only Declan Drake. Morning, Dec. How are you?
Very good, Reg. Thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, great stuff now. It was a good week last week for the hurlers, overcoming Laois, 30 points to 119. So, good win.
Yeah, a very important win. You know, Laois are, like ourselves, are going to be down there in the battle to avoid the drop this year. So it's very important to get off the mark, having lost to Kilkenny the previous week, as it was for them having lost to Wexford. But score 30 points, which is a fine score. 18 points for young Donald Burke from the Fianna. We spoke about him a couple of weeks ago before the Kilkenny game. He scored 15 points from place balls last week, 14 frees and a 65. Now, the way modern hurling has gone, Reg, and there's been a lot of debate about this over the last week, particularly the importance of a quality free taker has been magnified in recent games since this National League started. And in Donal, Dublin have a tried and trusted, might be a youngster, but he's still a quality hurler and a great striker, and that's going to be very important over the months to come. But big game for them today now against Antrim at Parnell Park at 5 o'clock. Again, a team on a similar level, 2 points from two games, and looking to kick on and push on up that table. And not only is it crucial to get two league points this afternoon against the Saffrons, who have beaten Clare and went down narrowly to Kilkenny last week, but of course they play each other in the championship in a couple of months' time as well. So the importance of laying down a marker for that as well.
And what's the kind of general feeling, having bounced back against Laois, the hurlers, they're feeling they can take this Antrim side? Because I'd say they're full of confidence. I mean, as you said, narrowly losing to Kilkenny, having had that great win against Clare, they're obviously a team on a bit of a mission themselves.
Yes, they certainly are. And I mean, they're targeting the Dublin Championship game as well, so they will bring a lot of confidence to Parnell Park this afternoon. There's no doubt about that. But so can we. Very positive in large patches against Kilkenny the first day out, although we fell a little bit short ultimately at the end, and we got the result which we needed last week. So two teams on an upward curve meeting this evening, so it's going to be an interesting battle there from 5 o'clock.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, the football is back in force, of course, and loads of people are going to be interested in that. Mick Gavin has had to step up and bridge the gap for the moment with the Dubs. You caught up with him there, Easy. Let's have a quick listen to what he had to say.
Well, Anthony Cunningham certainly wasn't too happy about being on the wrong end of it today, and I can feel sorry for him. It's really a forwards game now, to be honest with you. Once you get the ball and you stick it under your arm, you go direct to goal. But I'm sure teams will come up with ways to combat it, and we'll all be looking at that going forward. I'm not sure about this one. This one is quite a different rule. It's very direct, and it rewards direct play. So I'm not sure. Again, we'll just have to see if all the rest police it the same way, but today the ref was very, you know, he made his mind up early that if he deemed him to be the last man back, he was given a penalty and a black card. And as I said, we were on the good end of it today. It may be different next week.
Three penalties last week, Declan. They were on the good end of it. This black card thing is leading to a few of these. Just give it a little bit of a quick explanation for the listeners, maybe, just to explain it.
Well, first of all, there were three penalties, as Mick said there, in the game. Cormac Costello, who finished with a total of 113 on the day, scored 1-1 from the penalty. He had one hit the upright as well. But basically, the new rule is that if you're inside the 21-yard line or the 20-metre line, if you're metrically inclined, and you have a goal-scoring opportunity and you're fouled, taken down or whatever, the referee will award a penalty and a black card. So it's a double whammy for the defenders. Now, he awarded Dublin two penalties in those circumstances last week. One of them was 100% correct. The second one was a little bit dubious in my mind and other people's minds as well. And this is where the problem now comes in, is the interpretation of that particular rule, how that's going to impact the games as they go forward. But as Mick said, they were the beneficiary of it last week. Cormac Costello was outstanding on the day with 113. The Whitehall column, Kilman, he's come in more times off the bench, but just can't, you know, make that elusive breakthrough into the six starting forwards that Dublin have, such as the level of competition up there. But I'd probably expect them to be in the team for Kerry tomorrow. But look, like the hurlers a couple of weeks ago, just important to get out first day, get back on the bike and get going again after the long break.
Kerry are a team on a mission. They look good. There's a lot of chatter around Dublin having to go away, you know, down in Thurles because of all that went on in the past. This is going to be an unbelievably tough game for Dublin, and especially after the break and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that Kerry are the team to fear this year, Reg. Absolutely. I mean, you can only imagine the level of criticism that the team would have suffered after that shock Munster semi-final defeat to Cork last year, or at least the manner of it, not so much the defeat, but the manner of it, the way it happened. And they've come back this year. They're absolutely buzzing from the start. I don't know what's happening in Galway. They just seem to have regressed beyond belief. And it was a fine win for Kerry last week. Set down the marker. The likes of the Cliffords are on fire, and they'll relish the opportunity of taking on the All-Ireland champions in Thurles tomorrow. And great memories of approximately 20 years ago when they met twice in the All-Ireland quarterfinals down there. The Kingdom came through that day. You might remember in one of the games a fantastic sideline point from Maurice Fitzgerald into the town end goal, which
I remember it well.
Replayed. I was right above his head as he kicked it that day, and I can still hope that it was going to drift left on the post and wide.
Well, he kicked it far enough left, but he made sure the wind was bringing it around. Absolute, it was an unbelievable
class,
kick.
Yeah, absolute class. So we're hoping for more of the same type of quality between these two tomorrow. I mean, I see Eamon Fitzmaurice, the former Kerry manager in the Examiner today, and I quote, "Dublin want to clip Kerry's wings before they become a monster." So if that's the attitude in the Kingdom, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out on the pitch tomorrow.
Yeah, but then you hear that all the time, you know, and then when it comes down to it, championship is different too.
It is,
you know.
It is, of course, but I don't think you can afford to shadow box in these type of situations.
No.
Remember, like, it's only a three-game regular league season. So the team that can get on to 4 points after two games tomorrow is in a very, very strong position.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. The ladies are back as well. The little ladies NFL is back, and Lucy Collins, of course, is involved in that. You caught up with her as well. Let's have a listen to what Lucy had to say.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I think all ladies football players, current, past, present, like, all rejoice at that announcement. And I think it just shows, like, the drive and the development of the organisation and the games, and also, like, the backing of Lidl, like, the Leaving the Field campaign has just been a massive driving force in keeping participation and participation of the game, and also just highlighting the game. And I know they've just announced I think up to 60 games of live streaming, so it's just brilliant to get that exposure on national level as well.
60 games of live streaming, that's absolutely incredible, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you look at League of Ireland and the way they kind of that streaming service stopped, and now the FAI is talking about doing their own streaming service, and we're talking about you know, women's sport being to the forefront and how much important vision is of it. That's a massive commitment and a great result for ladies football, 60 games.
Absolutely, and you know, full credit to Lidl and the LGFA for that commitment. But yeah, Dublin playing Waterford tomorrow afternoon, which is one of the games that will be streamed live. Just looking at the Dublin team that was announced, Reg, for tomorrow's game. Big day for Abby Shields of Lucan Sarsfields in goal. Indeed, Orla Nolan of the County Junior Champions. Ballinteer St John's getting a start as well. Great to see Thomas Davis, Lady Alwyn Carey back in the side too, having taken the year out last year. Big opportunities too for the likes of Laura McGinley and Deirdre Murphy in the team. But an interesting addition to the panel this year is the women's rugby international, Hannah Tyrrell. Hannah, of course, who did play football for Dublin before she switched to rugby, she's back playing with Nafina. And she's back now in the county panel. She's listed as a substitute tomorrow afternoon in that game. So it'll be interesting to see how she's employed.
And I wonder, has she forgone the rugby, or is she running both?
I'm not sure about that, to be honest. I'm not sure about that. But from a Dublin ladies football point of view, it's great to have a player of that calibre to be added to the squad for this year. And again, like the men, it's a truncated season. You know, three regular league games. The championship draw was made during the week. They're going to be facing Waterford again in that. So a dress rehearsal tomorrow. And like the hurlers have against Antrim. And the other team in their group is Tyrone. So they'll be two mouth-watering clashes to look forward to a little bit later on in the year.
Excellent stuff. Okay, the Camogie is back as well. They're taking on Offaly in O'Toole Park at half two.
Down in my own patch at O'Toole Park, half past two this afternoon. The girls put up a creditable performance last week against the All-Ireland champions Kilkenny. Unfortunately, just came out on the wrong side of the scoreline. So they'll be looking to get back to winning ways against Offaly this afternoon. That one throws in at 2:30 at O'Toole Park. And again, that's a game that's been streamed on the Camogie website.
Excellent stuff. Okay, just to finish, I see there was a little bit of an announcement. I think in Ulster they're going to start looking at trialling crowds at games.
I see that. I think it's 500 they're allowed from next week, which is absolutely fantastic. I don't know how far off we are of such a development, but certainly the North is going in the right direction. It's great to see it in England as well. I've been glued to the playoffs because I'm a lover of lower league football, as you might know, in the UK, and to have the crowds back in the grounds is just absolutely fantastic, and it certainly adds to the quality of the games and the contests.
Yeah, well, I heard one of the ministers saying that we could look forward to being in Croke Park for the All-Ireland Hurling Final. So let's hold them to that. Let's let them off the hook on that. So we'll see if that actually comes to the fore.
I'll tell you one thing for nothing. Everybody knows the scramble for tickets when there's 82,500 in Croke Park. If you're allowed only 30 or 40,000, can you imagine what it'll be like?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It'll be quite incredible. But let's say a few prayers that could actually happen this year. It would be an amazing thing to get some live crowds back at games as soon as possible. Okay, Declan, as always, wonderful stuff. If you're going to stay with me for the rest of the show, we'll be talking football with Alan Cawley after the break, so don't go away. Eight. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Text us on 087 11 55 777. Of course, you can WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Okay, it's time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. How are you?
I'm very good. And Declan's in studio with us here as well.
Good stuff.
Yeah. An interesting night last night, I have to say. The 33-match unbeaten streak bit the dust last night. Stephen Bradley's men beaten 2-1 away to Dundalk. And a good match, too.
Yeah, extremely eventful night in the Premier Division, Reggie. And a night that we probably needed in terms of the league title race, because at one stage there in the last couple of weeks, you were probably looking, especially when Shamrock Rovers beat St. Pat's. We discussed it on the show a couple of weeks back, and then Pat's obviously lost to Drogheda. We were thinking that maybe possibly Shamrock Rovers could run away with it. Mm. But Sligo Rovers, to be fair, got the point last week through the walkover game, which I don't agree with, to be honest with you, Reggie. But that kept them in touching distance, got a good result last night. And obviously with Shamrock Rovers losing, and it's as we keep saying, it's nothing against them, but just in terms of a title race and what we want to see, it keeps it competitive. So St. Pat's have closed the gap with a big win. But as you said, them losing in Dundalk last night brings them all back. And I think that's good. It's what we wanted. And to be fair to Dundalk, they responded in the right way. There was protests outside the ground. All is not well in the camp up there, as we know. Yeah. They still need a manager. I don't think that result fixes everything by any means. I'd say it only fixes one-tenth of what's going on up there at the moment, Reggie. But it's certainly a positive result from their point of view and from the league's point of view. Shamrock Rovers will be disappointed with the result. They played well on the night. I heard Stephen Bradley's interview afterwards, and they hit the woodwork, I think, four times. they carved out plenty of chances, and even Jim McGilton admitted that they rode their luck at times. But sometimes you have to do that against the champions as well, and they got the result in the end, so he'll be delighted. But yeah, it should be acknowledged as well, Shamrock Rovers' unbeaten run, as you say, Reggie. It's a record that they've broken, their own record, 33 games. It's a phenomenal achievement, and they'll just have to start on one all over again.
Sets it up nicely, Alan, for Monday night when your beloved Sligo Rovers come to Tallaght Stadium in a 1v2 clash, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, Declan. I'm really looking forward to it, Ja. And as I said, that makes it all the better and all the more competitive now going into the games on Monday and just ahead of the break. Wouldn't it be great heading into the break, Declan, if we did have maybe three teams vying for that title and going gung-ho after the break? So it sets it up lovely Monday night. I'm really looking forward to the game. I'm going to go to the game. Lehman's done a great job, to be fair, this season in the showground. As I've mentioned, his recruitment has been far better, brought in better players. Gibson, he scored again last night. He's had a huge impact at the start of the season. And they'll be confident going to Tallaght Monday night. And rightly so, with the form that they're in. They're on a really good, rich vein of form. They're second in the table. And I don't think Shamrock Rovers should hold any fear for them.
Fantastic news, of course, about the developments off the pitch down there as well, with around the showgrounds. But I know Reg is going to come to Bowes in a minute, but I met an old friend of ours in Richmond Park last night, Lynn O'Neill. She was asking for you, Alan.
Lynn, yeah, she's lovely, Lynn. I met her actually earlier on in the season as well. And she's absolutely... I was down in your old stomping ground meeting people that were asking for you, Declan, in Tolga Park last night. So we were all on our travels. Yeah, that's where I was last night. Shelburne got a great win against UCD in the first division, but and they're going really well, obviously, in the first division as well. They've opened up a gap of 5 points now at the top, so that's great for them and you and me and all the ones that have a soft spot for Shelburne as well, Declan.
And I mentioned St. Pat's as well at the start of this season, and they're really going great. And having that match now, you know, that they have coming up with only 3 points to go. They're going away to Derry next, isn't it? I think,
yeah.
So they're like, with 3 points and Derry not going great, 3 points off the lead, real chance for Pats to put some pressure on up at the top there.
Definitely, because I suppose you look at the game on Monday, Reggie, between Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers, they could take points off each other and that could close the gap even further for St. Pat's if they do their business in Derry. And they have Stephen O'Donnell, we've mentioned it a few times on the show, he's done a great job. They were unlucky in the game that they did lose to Shamrock Rovers, the late winner, but he'd probably be more disappointed with last week's result, the way to Drogheda, they didn't respond very well and they obviously got beat. But to be fair to Drogheda, they're going great guns as well and it's not an easy place to go. So I think it was important last night in a tough game against what I think is a good Bohemian side. It might not look like that in the league table, Reggie, but they're not far away. I've seen them in a lot of games and they played very well at the games. And again, last night they played very well. They're just not very clinical. And they're just probably offering up needless goals, or the concession of goals has probably killed them, especially late ones. And that was the case again last night after them equalising, then they concede a penalty. So that was a huge result for St. Pat's and keeps them right on track, as you say, just on the coattails of Shamrock Rovers. And that's what they need to do, really, Reggie, just hang in on the coattails of Shamrock Rovers with Sligo too. Because to be fair to Stevie, when he came in, he probably wanted to put his own stamp on things, and I always felt he would with the mentality that he had as a player, and I felt he'd bring that into his management. It's probably taken him 6 to 9 months to maybe weed out the lads that he didn't want and put his stamp on it with the lads that he does want, and he has that this year with the boys that he's brought in, and you look at the results that they're getting, and I think it's been very positive for St. Pat's this year, and I just hope for the good of the title race as well that they can keep it going.
Alan, it was a crazy game down there last night. 2-1 ultimately to Pats. 3 penalties in the game awarded by Rob Hennessy. All of them controversial. But, you know, it's 1-1, 89 minutes. You think, OK, this is going to peter out into a draw. And then you get 2 penalties, 1 for either side. You must remember that Bowes actually missed a penalty as well. Georgie Kelly hitting the woodwork after 10 minutes. So Keith was a little bit disappointed about that. But he spoke about afterwards their need to game manage better in derby situations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important, Declan. And to be fair, that's probably a new group. That's something that Keith is probably trying to instill in this group, where it's something he would have had over the years with maybe the previous teams that he's had. But I always feel the biggest problem for Keith, and as you well know, Declan, is because he's doing such a good job there, and Trevor as well, but come the end of the season, he loses his 3 or 4 best players at the end of every season, and he's trying to have to bring in new lads. And that's where he's done brilliant in the new lads that he's brought in the recruitment. But again, he's had to do it this year, and he's probably still trying to instill a little bit of that in those boys at the moment and maybe create that culture that he's had with previous teams over the last 3 or 4 years. So he'd be so disappointed. And that's what's costing him, really, because, as I say, Declan, I've seen all the teams now, and I've seen Bowes 3 or 4 times. they're not far off. They really are not. I think they're a decent side, and they're not far off being in those maybe top three or four places where they should be challenging for Europe. So he needs to remain positive. I know it's difficult, especially when you can see the late goal like that, to lose the game. But I think he just needs to keep doing what they're doing, and I think their time will come.
Okay, Alan, time to look across the water now. It's an unbelievable day tomorrow. That top four race, we know the league is decided. We know United are safe. But Chelsea, Liverpool and Leicester all battling it out for that top four slot. And, you know, nothing given for any of them. You know, Chelsea away to Villa. Liverpool at home to Crystal Palace, you probably think they'll get that one. And certainly Leicester against Spurs. You'd fancy Leicester the way Spurs are going. But it's still mouth-watering battles there.
Yeah, it is, Reggie. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow because, you see, everything is kind of done, and it has been done over the past 3 or 4 weeks, and this top four has kept us going, I suppose, in terms of interest and the way the results have gone over the last couple of weeks. I felt it was a good day last week for football as well. The cup final, for the first time, we spoke about it many times, Reggie, about the cup losing its magic. But I really felt as though last Saturday with Leicester winning it, and the scenes afterwards with the previous owner's son and all that kind of stuff, and the history behind that, I felt for the first time in years that it actually, a team won it, that it meant something. Even Brendan Rodgers, a manager who obviously would have grown up like us, so close to the FA Cup and what it meant to him, and I think it was important for him to get a cup on the board, and he delivered that. And I think, to be fair to him, if you look at the reaction to the game they played in the league game on Tuesday night against Chelsea as well, his reaction wasn't as bad or worrying as what it might be had they not won the cup. So I think he had a little bit of credibility in the bank by winning the cup. So even though it would be huge for Leicester to get into the top four, I don't think there's as much pressure on them now, because last year when they slipped out of it, all the question marks were being raised about, oh, is Rodgers a bottler, and this kind of nonsense of a narrative that was around it. When you think they have the 8th highest budget in the league, Reggie, and he still has them competing in the top four, and I think they've been in the top four something like 263 days of the season this year. Like, it's phenomenal what he's doing at Leicester. It really is, compared to what he's competing against in budget-wise compared to the other teams. So I would love to see Leicester get into the top four again for Rodgers and the season that he's had. But because of the result during the week, they may just slip out, Reggie. But if you were to ask me who I want, I'd love to see, I think, Chelsea and Leicester. I don't think, even though, to be fair to Klopp, and I've made excuses for them all year, and they're not excuses, they're valid reasons, that the injuries that they've had. I think if they get into the top four, they'll have worked wonders, really, when you think of the injuries that they've had. But I just think over the course of the season, they don't deserve to be. Whereas Leicester have been in that top four, as I say, for over 250 days or something. So I think they deserve it, and I'd be sorry to see them not get in if they don't.
And I think the reality is, I think all three teams will win, Chelsea, Liverpool and Leicester. And I think the goal difference will just do Leicester in the end, because I think four goals, is as it stands at the moment, is too much to overcome for them. So I can't see
that. I think maybe Villa, Reggie. Villa have had a good season. Grealish is back as well tomorrow. They had a good win during the week, obviously. So I think that could be the one that could be a tricky one for Chelsea. And obviously they're thinking of the Champions League next week as well. So possibly, but yeah, it may come down to three of them could easily win, and obviously the goal difference could catch Leicester out.
What about Wednesday night, quickly, United against Villarreal? How do you feel about that one?
I'd be worried about their current form, Reggie, and you know my feelings on, even though Solskjaer are finishing second, I don't think they've been up against much. When you look at all the things we've outlined, with Liverpool having no team, Chelsea having no manager up until Tuchel come in, really. So like, you're looking at United and everybody saying it's great progress. I'm not so sure about that. I wouldn't get too carried away, Reggie. I think come next year they'll still be battling out maybe for the top four, because they're nowhere near Man City. But I think they should win the Europa League, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, I said this to Ken earlier, at the beginning of the season, given what had gone on with Ole and question marks around the team and the players and the likes of Pogba and everything else, I think, you know, coming second in the league and a final on this Wednesday night, he would have bitten your hand off for that at the beginning.
Yeah, they probably would, but second maybe with 2 points behind Man City, not what they are, Reggie, or whatever. And I don't mean, I know the points, it's fairly, you look at it and it's what, is it 6 or 7 at the moment, but the league was over 2 months ago, you know? So I'm looking at what Man United, more so from second down to fifth and sixth. And when you look at those teams, like Arsenal have been a shambles. They're always the ones that might be, say, in the top six. So they haven't been up against them. They haven't been up against the Liverpool that have been flying high. They haven't been up against Chelsea that have been flying high. Leicester, yeah, but they should be getting ahead of Leicester. So
I just look at what you're comparing it against, and I always compare Man United against the very best because that's the standard they want to be judged on. Yeah. And they're miles off Man City, Reggie. Miles off.
That's true, but most teams are. Declan, Wednesday night, Villarreal, do you fancy United to get the win?
Yeah, I think they'll get the job done. And I'm not a Manchester United fan, but I would like to see them win the game, to be honest with you, because I like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I backed him from the start when he got the job, and even when he was going through that rough period when a lot of United fans were on the case saying he wasn't good enough, they needed change. The board stuck with him, and I think he will reward them with a Europa League victory on Wednesday. But it's what happens in the
next... Declan, you're just too nice. That's the thing. You're backing everyone. The problem with the Europa League, it's like a charity shield now, the Europa League. I wouldn't be holding too much weight with that.
There's another level of it coming in next season, Al. There's a level below.
I know.
Next year,
it's a joke, though, as well. A third level.
I just leave you one point, an inspiration to all footballers out there. The story of Jamie Vardy. Many people think the FA Cup starts in the first weekend in January. It doesn't. It starts in August in the preliminary rounds. And Jamie Vardy holds the record of having played in every single round of the FA Cup from the first qualifying round to the final. So there's hope for all footballers out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Alan, who have you got in the show this week?
Well, I don't want to announce it yet, Reggie, because it's not confirmed, but it's happening either Monday or next Monday, and Declan will know him well, and it's a good one.
Okay.
That's all I'd say.
That's good. I look forward to that. Okay. Well, enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Super Sunday tomorrow, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Thanks a million, lads.
Take care. That's our own Alan Cawley there. Of Cawley's Call fame, of course, giving us his thoughts on tomorrow, Super Sunday, and, of course, the United game next week. But that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producer, Jane McNamara. And I'd also like to thank all of the guests who joined us on the show today. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.